Welcome to The Future of Data Centers, a mini-podcast series from the viewpoint of server farmers and data growers. In this DMaaS-focused series, hear from industry experts as they guide IT leaders and C-suites on an important journey into how data center management as a service will enable transformation at scale.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jean-Marc Lima, editor of the Tech Capital, your host for this Data Center Management as a Service-focused mini-series with Aaron Shenoy, VP of Sales and Marketing, and Dave Eastman, VP of In Command, both of Server Farm, as well as tech journalist and writer Ambrose McNevin. We bring you the second episode of our three-part mini-series spanning around what makes true data center management as a service so unique and how it enables enterprises to improve efficiency while saving valuable time and money. The topic of today's episode is DMaaS versus DCIM. There's been a lot of conversations around this topic that's bringing the space, data center management as a service. Despite what some definitions might say, DMaaS is not DCIM, nor is DCIM on steroids, nor is it simply DCIM delivered from a cloud. So what is it and how do these two acronyms face off? But before we start, Ambrose, let me ask you from a student to teacher, what kind of news are you going to be looking forward to in the coming months in the data center space?
Thanks, Jao. Hello again. The biggest thing I think that's going to happen in the next couple of months is COP26. And why that's of interest to the data center professional is that when we start looking out 3, 5, 10 years and the time frame for things that are going to be discussed at COP26. And remember, this is United Nations. This is where the Paris Climate Change Accord came from in earlier COP conferences. What's fascinating to me is how digital technology is actually moving to the front of the queue in terms of what its energy use and efficiency, how important that's going to be, but also how that is going to become a platform for offsetting other older traditional industries in terms of their greenhouse gas emissions, in terms of their carbon footprint. So I think it's got two sides to it. And anybody who looks at who the main sponsors and who the main companies are involved, you're talking about some of the world's biggest tech companies are involved. At previous events, that wasn't the case. They were there, but they were behind the scenes. So a couple of things on that. We're going to talk about DMaaS, data center management as a service versus DSIM, infrastructure management. And it comes down to management again. Management and measurement go hand in hand. And ultimately, if you don't know what the carbon footprint is of what your operations are, if you can't gain any valuable data, and I mean really valid data into how your data center, any type of digital infrastructure is operating, then you're in a non-starter. You're not even going to get out of the starting gate. So I think that's why this conversation is relevant to that. I was actually in Glasgow where it's going to happen. And you can see that the place is getting very kind of excited and revved up for it. So that's the thing I would look out for for anybody in the data center space, is just to keep an eye on that for COP26 in November.
That's interesting. And let's see as well if there's any direct mentions of the sector on the back of COVID having put us on the limelight of the world stage as well, in terms of digital infrastructure being so critical to everything we do, especially in the last 18 months. But guys, in the last episode, we talked about what is DMaaS. And now let's talk first about DCIM, so data center infrastructure management. We know that the big guys, the hyperscalers, as usual, they very quickly adapt these sort of new technologies and trends, and they kind of drive the market demand and how the market goes over the next few years. But what would you say are the pros and cons of DCIM? What are we looking at here?
Well, I might pick that up. And actually, Zhao, you just mentioned something, the hyperscalers. And I thought it's worth getting that topic sort of maybe on the table and off the table quite quickly. Let me tell you why. So the hyperscalers are incredibly important to digital infrastructure in general. Ambrose touched on the topic, perfectly. Many years ago, say 5 years ago, they were very much kind of listeners when it came to, things like what's now, COP26 and sustainability in general. They're now extremely active participants in that. And by the way, that is a level of leadership that, frankly, we should all follow. But when it comes to infrastructure management, they have something that's quite unique in their model in terms of simplicity. You know, the vast majority of their hardware is similar. And the way that they manage hardware, especially in the IT environment, is actually quite simple. It's at a very different scale compared to an enterprise, that's clear, but it's actually quite simple. So they don't run, you know, 50 different versions of server hardware and 500 different applications from 500 different vendors. They actually have quite a homogeneous environment, which means that infrastructure management for them is actually much more about telemetry and making sure they know which bit of the infrastructure is broken that needs replacing, and they can very quickly replace things like that. They can also leverage sort of software redundancy for failover and things like that much more elegantly than, you know, than traditional enterprises. The reason I raise that, I think it's important to kind of put, you know, DSIM and data center management as a service kind of really in the context for the organizations for whom the benefit is greatest. And those are people that have an entirely heterogeneous environment, very different, with lots of different applications, lots of different hardware from lots of different vendors, different shapes and sizes of buildings, different design, different architectures. Those are the people for whom the benefit is greatest because the problem is the most complex. So going to your question, you know, what are the pros and cons of DSIM? Actually, I'm going to start. I'm not sure there are any cons of DSIM. There's nothing wrong with DSIM. It's not a bad thing. It's just not enough. And I think the challenge with the DSIM industry in particular, it has long marketed itself as this is the one thing you need to make life simple. It isn't. It's one of many things you need. And the important thing is you have to bring all the pieces together in the right way. And so generally speaking, people have two choices. Do they do it themselves or do they bring in a partner? If you do it yourself, you buy software, a DSIM platform, and you do it yourself. You run it yourself, you look after it yourself, you make all the decisions yourself, or you decide to partner with someone who does it for a living on the basis that they're going to do it, you know, faster, better, cheaper than you will. But just to go back to the pros, what does DSIM do? DSIM brings together the relevant information, presents it in a useful way. As I said, those two things, very, very important, but they're not enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might add to that, Aaron. DSIM brings the relevant data together so that it can be used. And when you look at the hyperscalers, their data center efficiency is a core competency. That's one of the most important things they do. And they build teams, their data center team budgets are growing. They have expertise, career paths in that area. Right. And they mostly are building their own DCIM tools. They're not going to the market and buying some of the ready. They might pick and choose, but they've made a career out of it. Now you go to the enterprises with the heterogeneous, you know, implementations, and they're reducing their budgets. They want to go to cloud. They want to go to colo. They're reducing their data center management teams. They are short-term positions. People go in and out. And so you give them a DCIM tool to manage everything, and then you mix that with lower staffing, lower budgets, change of people, and it's impossible to keep the data accurate and get the processes going. So that's where DMaaS really provides the solution for these enterprise companies. We make it a career path. Yeah. And
just think, you know, let's kind of think about a sort of very, again, I may be oversimplifying, but for the purposes of the discussion, let's sort of simplify the concept. If DSIM on its own was the solution, then every DSIM customer would be supremely reliable, supremely efficient, and be much more sustainable. I'm going to pause for effect, because guess what? We know that's not true. So if it's not true, again, I'm oversimplifying. By definition, it must be reasonable to determine that DSIM on its own isn't the solution. you know, and I know that we sort of labor the point a little bit, but, you know, it's the three things. You need the right platform from a technology perspective. You have to have the right people. And Dave said it beautifully. You have to have people who are in this business as a career for development, for growth, for learning. And you have to put the right process around them. And you have to get those three things right. Otherwise, you know, you can't, you just can't run data center operations reliably or efficiently.
Which I think you touched on a very important, I think challenge is probably the right word, which is the skills set within the data center space as well, which a lot of times becomes overlooked. And I think it was you, Aaron, that mentioned in the last episode as well, that we do need more people with DMAS and I guess DCIM as well, skills to help manage the platforms.
You know, if we think about data centers, and again, let's set the hyperscalers aside for the time being. Yeah. So the rest of the world needs data centers, but doesn't want them. So if you're a bank or a retail company or a telco or a pharmaceutical company or a utility company, you know that you need a data center. And you need a data center for many reasons. You need a data center because you can't put everything in the cloud. And the can't put everything in the cloud could be a time function. You can't do it today, but you'll do it in a year from now or 2 years from now. It might be a regulatory function. You can't move to the cloud ever because regulations in the country forbid that kind of data or those kind of applications to live in a cloud environment, public or private. You might not be able to move to the cloud because the applications that you're using are legacy that sit on a mainframe. And they're going to remain on that mainframe until some point in time in the future. Hmm. So organizations need data centers. They know that they need them. But the want really is they recognize that they're not in that industry, that it's not their business. And that leads to a challenge, which is it becomes hard for those organizations to attract the right talent. Because if you are a data center professional and you want to learn and you want to become, you know, the best data center operator that you can be, frankly, you're not going to learn how to do that in an organization like that. You're going to join an organization for whom data center operations is a core business. So in my mind, it makes a lot of sense from a technology perspective, from a business perspective, and certainly from a skills perspective, for organizations who need data centers but don't want them, to outsource or partner with organizations for whom the only business is running data centers and running infrastructure. You know, Server Farm isn't a bank. We don't do banking. We don't make pharmaceuticals. We don't generate electricity. We run data center operations. So we're really, really good at that because it's our core business. It's the difference between us being successful, you know, and not. And so it's really about getting those two, you know, sort of halves of the, you know, the sphere, if you will, to come together. In our mind, that's what data center management as a service does. It solves those critical tools, expertise, process issues, and puts them in front of customers, you know, so they can just focus on the things that are important to them, the applications they need to develop, the services that they need to deploy.
So, Aaron, I think it's fascinating what you're saying, the way you've characterized that. Every CIO that I've spoken to in the last 12 or 18 months, and I've spoken to quite a few, every CIO I've spoken to has usually, not always, but usually just entered a new role. And the first thing they've said is, I said, well, what's your plan? What's your business plan for the next 18 months? And they said, well, the first thing to do is to assess what I have, and then see, ultimately, my main goal is to abstract my workload and applications away from my infrastructure. Yep. Well, I can't do that completely. What I have to do is I know I'm going to be left with some form of data center operation. But then I have to find new platforms in order to develop and to run the business in the way that I need to do it because I'm going through a digital transformation and that's what I need. So what I need are two things. I need to have the right people in place, and I've got a limited budget, which means I won't be employing data center experts to run a shrunken rump of owned, operated data center infrastructure, but I'll be passing that off to a third party, probably a colo supplier. And then I'll also be looking for somebody to run that, run both my colo and my exit, my rump, as it were, in a much more efficient way. So I can see what is actually I have under management. And then I can run it far more efficiently. But all of this is going to become not a, as we mentioned before, cloud first, but it will be an as a service first approach. And that's what every one of them has said to me without failure, and said, abstract the workload away, the application of the workload away from the infrastructure, find a better way to run the infrastructure.
So let me also jump in here. Aaron, I think you well said that DSIM is absolutely essential to data center management, but as soon as an enterprise gets a DSIM solution, they realize that people in process now become their problem. Right. It's not until you solve all of those problems do you have a solution. On the other hand, though, there's something that's really misunderstood by many in the industry, and this is where DSIM tools can have a con. And that is that, I'm going to give you a story. Once you know how many servers are in a rack, you have the next question, well, how much power do those servers require? And that's not an easy solution, because we all have learned that it's not faceplate. So now you have to do some analytics on how much power. And after you do those analytics, you ask the question, well, what two power sources are supplying, or three or four or five, and how much from this power source is going to that server? And then you have the question, well, shoot, if that power source fails, how much power is going over here? And you just, when you start asking the capacity questions, how do I optimize, you keep having to ask deeper and deeper questions. It's like peeling back an onion until you actually get the data that you need to make a decision. And I bring that up because people think, you just have the intuitive thought that, geez, there's a receptacle, here's a rack space. How hard is it to, put that server in the rack and plug it in and get it powered? I'm sorry, that's not rocket science. But actually managing data center infrastructure effectively does get damn close to rocket science when you get down to all of those layers of the onion. And you ultimately have to get there. I speak from experience.
Dave, I think you just managed to make a boring part of the industry a much more interesting part of the industry with rocket science. So hopefully they'll attract more people into it.
Now, in the last couple of answers, I've heard rocket science from Dave and I've heard rump from Ambrose. So I'm thinking steak. So now I've got steak and rockets.
I want to see the job posting with all those keywords.
Yeah, that's right.
Very fun. But let me bring the whole thing together now, because we spoke about DMAS in the last episode. Now we're talking about DSIM. I also want to pick up on Ambrose's COP 2021 point at the beginning. And let's talk about server farms. So I'm going to bring the fourth point as well. So you've got InCommand. Dave, you play the critical role on developing and deploying InCommand across right. the industry. How is Server Farm kind of helping enterprises and the world around everything we just talked about, all the challenges, all the opportunities? What are you guys doing, and how is InCommand helping to combat the war on climate change?
Wow, that was a big question.
I know, sorry, I'm kind of ramping all the four topics into one.
from helping the enterprise to solving climate change. Let me just
how are you saving the world?
Well, actually, one enterprise at a time, Joe, one data center at a time. So customers, enterprises, they need to, as Ambrose said earlier, the first issue is, what do I have and where is it? And so we bring a SWAT team into our clients, and we audit their data centers down to a level that allows them to manage them and answer that question. And then we bring a team of people to augment their existing teams to actually keep the data accurate over time, so that as their people come and go through promotion or retirement, we can be the go-to people to make sure that their data center data is good, so that the data analysts, and when it comes time to make critical decisions on where to move a workload, they have the data, they can get it done quickly. And I guess that's where we solve the world's problems. We allow people to actually effectively and efficiently operate these highly critical facilities.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about rocket science and we talked about rump steaks earlier. So I'm going to introduce the concept of pleasure and pain before it feels like we're going very, very far away from the topic. So infrastructure management, generally speaking, for enterprises is a pain. We kind of talked about, you know, the lack of tooling, the lack of process, lack of people, et cetera. Infrastructure management for us, weirdly, it's a pleasure. It's what we do. It's actually what motivates, you know, our team every single day. And the reason it motivates them is because we know what the outcome, we know what good looks like. You know, we've seen the promised land. Now I've got rocket science, rump steak, and promised land. But we've seen what good looks like. In other words, if we do our job well, we can stop our customers building more capacity or building a new data center or buying more infrastructure or hiring more people. And all of those, ultimately, going back to what Ambrose said at the start in COP26, all of those things help in a really big way. And if we can solve those problems for our customers at scale, which is what we've now started to do, you know, we're managing hundreds of locations. Over the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to be in the thousands. That means that we're making, you know, a really appreciable difference. And by the way, you know, there's a real sort of gearing effect here because of the platform we've developed and because of the people that we have and the process that we have. We can run those facilities, we can run those locations with a fraction of the number of people than if those enterprises ran those locations themselves. So not only are we helping as far as the infrastructure is concerned and the sustainability of all of those things, but we don't fly people around the world. We don't have to go and visit these data centers because we have so much great data and such strong process around how we collect that. The whole kind of management process is just becoming more and more efficient. So that kind of concept of, you know, we're kind of taking away that pain that organizations have, you know, and it's a pain that they feel very keenly. It's not a, you know, it's not a just a sort of a passing thing. They see it and feel it every day. You know, and as I said, we take huge pleasure about, you know, helping them solve those problems, because just as Dave said, you know, one enterprise at a time, one data set at a time, every single one of those makes, you know, makes a really big difference.
Little by little, we're going to get there.
Yes.
But guys, and similar to what we did last time before we closed down the episode, let's get to find out things about you, things from the past. I'm going to start with you, Aaron, first. What was your first email service? And this is going to really show how old you are.
Ooh, now. Well, actually, I'll tell you my work one. So I was at Intel at the time. So this would have been 97, probably 1997. And I can still remember my email address. And it was not short. It was aaron.chinoy@ccm.isw.intel.com.
Jesus.
In the days when even email systems had to be broken down into subdomains because you couldn't build infrastructure big enough to do, you know, the, I don't know, 80,000 people that were at Intel at the time. But interesting enough, I remember I had to fill out a 3-page form to get an email address. And I had to get the VP in EMEA to sign it off so that I could get an email address and an email account. So that was my first work one. I think my personal one was probably about the same time. I think it was probably with a broadband provider. Well, I say broadband. Actually, I think at the time it was just 56K modem. I think it was FreeServe. So it was probably something aaron.chinoy@freeserve.net.
Okay, that's interesting. So, I mean, the fact that the VP had to approve the email address, does that mean that not everyone even had an address, an email address at Intel back then?
Oh, no. Very few people did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And by the way, the same was true for internet access. You couldn't access the internet in an Intel building until you'd signed off, you know, you had the form and approval to do it. Okay. Also, no, you couldn't. Yeah. You could literally not get out of the building on the network unless you had approval, which again was, you know, late 90s.
Okay, I think we got a trip here to the past to be like a whole new podcast. Because I've just learned a lot from short ends, actually. Yeah. and Dave, looking at the past as well, who would be someone that you would like to give a shout out to that has inspired you throughout your career?
Well, I'd have to give a shout out to a CIO at Broadcom. His name is Ken Venner. He was a very, very detailed guy, and he's the one that asked the pertinent questions of me when it came to managing data centers. He says, look, this is what we need to know. And so he empowered me to go get those questions answered. He enabled me to build a team and develop some software. So yeah, I give a shout out to Ken Venner.
He trusted you and gave you the chance to go out and build something.
Yes, he did.
And Ambrose, I remember you, I'm going to put you on spotlight. I remember you being in the newsroom and explaining to us the value of data, and how mobile phones were speeding up data consumption, data production. So what was your first mobile phone?
Oh, good Lord. It was definitely a company phone. I can't remember. It was one of the old Nokias. It was certainly that long ago.
Did you have an antenna?
Slightly smaller than a brick. And it had a pull-up. It did have a pull-up error. I was hoping you were going to ask me about the application and email question, because I can remember that my first, being a writer, my first ever Word application was WordPerfect.
Yes.
In the days before Word took over the world. And I was working for an IT publisher, which had only recently moved from a green screen, having had that for 6 months, because it used to bash everything out on manual typewriters and send it off to be set or, for offset litho printing. So WordPerfect, everybody remember that? $3 billion they sold it to IBM.
I must shamefully say that everything that Aaron said and Ambrose user said, I don't know any of it. So it was the first
Lotus
time I
heard one, two, three.
For the first time.
That was my next thing, Aaron.
Yes. Lotus 1-2-3. I still remember it.
That was I'm pretty sure they sold us. I'm pretty sure they sold us that as an email solution.
Yeah. By the way, that was CC Mail.
CC Mail.
Lotus CC Mail. By the way, here's a little bit of trivia for you. You know all the keyboard shortcuts in Word, Control V, Control P. They're all from WordPerfect.
I think that's where I learned them.
That's where they came from. That's how I knew them first.
Oh no, I'm a Hotmail generation already.
Yeah,
that was my first email. But guys, Aaron, Dave, and Ambrose, thank you so much for your time to discuss about DCIM and the EMAS as well, and how Server Farm is helping the world. And I'll see you in the next episode.
For more insightful episodes of The Future of Data Centers, be sure to check out serverfarmllc.com/podcast for additional episodes available on demand, as well as other upcoming mini podcast series.